Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Saram, dear listeners, and welcome to Vahini Satsang. Our last segment on this beautiful Thursday live programs going on throughout the day. Today is May 4th, the first week of May 2017. My memory actually goes down to 3-4 months ago when we started this series. It's been really more than 18 weeks since Bhagwan's inspiration led us to start the Vahini Satsang. And we chose the first volume which Bhagwan directly penned way back in the 50s, The Nectarous Flow of Divine Love, Prema Vahini. And as we have been relishing and rejoicing in this beautiful stream of Sai love, we have no idea how 18 weeks have gone by. But every session has filled us with such beautiful insights that you always feel, oh my God, what I have discovered is just the tip of the iceberg, and it is so beautiful. If only I can ruminate on this more, how much more beautiful it will be, how much more bright it will make my life and the life of so many. How much Swami has packed in seemingly simple messages. And this is what Bhagwan did painstakingly, week after week, month after month. Every time a beautiful volume of Sanatan Sarthi reached the homes of devotees. From 1950s to 1985, 84 to be precise, Bhagwan every month shared the message that he has come to give humanity directly. No other avatar had done where God himself penned his message. And here we have Bhagwan who did that out of his immense compassion. Thanks to his grace, we have been able to deliberate the first 7 chapters, and to whatever extent we can, have perhaps relished a little of the beauty and the majesty and the profundity of the message that the avatar has come to give us for the current times. And today is really a very, very special day because Bhagwan has graciously sent to the studios someone who is not only a former student of Bhagwan's university, but someone who has mentored, guided, trained hundreds of students, generations of students from his school and in the university. Someone who has not only taught in the classrooms, in the school and in the colleges, in the Prashanthi Nilayam campus, but also has lived with the students in the hostel, several years with the students in the hostel, in the school, and now with the hostel students who are pursuing their bachelor's and master's program. Someone who has helped shape so many minds. Someone who has seen the blossoming of the personalities of youth as they endeavor to become Sai youth, Dr. Sailesh Srivastava. Someone all the students in all the campuses are familiar with because he is someone who has spearheaded any number of programs in the divine physical presence thanks to the gift of music that he is born with. So with prayers to Bhagwan that today too we assimilate some of these beautiful pearls that he has shared so freely to all of us, we begin this session. In the previous session, we discussed the first paragraph, the first part of chapter 8. So today we move on to the second segment of chapter 8. So let me play for you segment 8.2 of chapter 8 of Prema Vahini, and then we will listen to Sir's reflections.
ఇట్టి పవిత్ర పరమార్థపు సేవలకు ఆహార శుద్ధి కూడా అవసరం. ఆహారమును పట్టియే మనసుండును, ఆహారము మితంగా ఉండవలెను. ఆహారము ఎంత అను విషయం కన్నా ఎట్టిది తినుచున్నామన్నది ముఖ్యం. భుజించు ఆహారమునకు పరిణామం అవసరము. అసలు మనం భుజించుటెందులకు? ఉత్కృష్టమైన సేవ చేయుటకు. సేవయను యజ్ఞమును ఫలప్రదమును చేయుటకు ఆహారము ప్రధానము. ఆహార పరిశుద్ధి విషయమై మానవుడెంతో శ్రద్ధ చూపవలెను. ఈ రీతిగా మానవునికి తొడుగు అయిన దేహమును చూచుకుంటూ గుణములను అలవరుచుకున్నటకు ప్రయత్నించి క్రమక్రమేణా దేహాభిమానమును వదిలి ఆత్మానంద మార్గమునకు సులభంగా దారి తీయగలము.
టు అండర్టేక్ ది సీక్రెట్ యాక్ట్స్ ఆఫ్ సర్వింగ్ ది లార్డ్, ప్యూరిటీ ఆఫ్ ఫుడ్ ఇస్ ఎసెన్షియల్. యాజ్ ఇస్ ది ఫుడ్, సో విల్ బి ది మైండ్. Food partaken should be in limits. More important than the quantity of food is the quality of food we consume. There has to be a transformation of the food we partake. Actually, why do we eat? So that we can perform service of the highest order. If our seva yajna, our sacrificial acts of service, has to attain fruition, food is of principal importance. Man should show intense attention to the purity of food. In this manner, by taking care of the vesture, that is the human body, and at the same time striving to imbibe the virtues, one can slowly reduce attachment to the body and easily tread on the path to experience Atmanandam, or the bliss of the self.
So I think if you see the chapter, the second segment of chapter 8, sir, I think one thing that strikes me is, if you see the previous segment, Bhagwan there is talking about how one should lead one's life in a way that even in your daily normal routine, you're able to segregate the feeling of body consciousness from what you really are, which is the Atma consciousness. So it is at that level that Bhagwan is actually taking us in the first segment of chapter 8. And then suddenly he comes to food. Initially it seemed like, you know, this is so gross, and there Swami was talking about such a profound thing. So what are your thoughts on this?
Sairam. So that's quite striking that the two paragraphs are, you know, juxtaposed in such a way that the first and the second appear to be very different. But one way of looking at it is that in the first paragraph, Swami is making our goal clear. He's defining our goal.
Yes.
Because whenever we do any activity, any act, unless we define our goal, our purpose, we will be lost on the way. Because the way is,
yes,
can be very, you know, as they say, the dreary desert sands of dead habits, as Tagore puts it. So you can lose your way. So Swami has first defined the goal where he says that understanding the truth, self-realization, that's the goal of human birth, and therefore one must always remind ourselves of it. But then in the very next paragraph, he comes down to the way.
Yes.
The means to reach the goal. And the means are so important. If one has to reach the goal, you need a means. And there he starts from step one in some sense.
Yes.
He gets to the most fundamental thing. The main instrument that we have for fulfilling this purpose is the human body.
Yes.
And unless we take care of this body in the right manner, we will possibly lose ourselves. We will not be able to complete the journey.
Yes.
In fact, when Swami says, Jantunam Narajanma Durlabham, he's reminding us that the human birth and our encasement in this so-called body is for that one purpose, and therefore if we do not achieve that purpose in this very life, we are kind of defeating the main purpose of the human birth. So keeping that in mind, the body as a vehicle to reach God has to be taken care of. So now Swami is, I feel that Swami is reminding us that
yes,
even the food that we eat, first look at it in a very gross way, the gross food that we take for nourishing the body, unless we nourish the body, you know, we will not exist in this Narajanma, as they say. So nourishing the body. But then what is that nourishment? In the previous chapter also Swami tells, you know, what is food,
yes,
and the food that actually finally reaches and nourishes the body.
Yes, that is the real food.
Yes. And then there are places where Swami defines that food actually means food from all the senses.
Correct.
Though in this context it appears that Swami is first talking about the gross level,
yes,
that is the food that we eat. The purity of that food is so important because many of us are not aware that the food that we eat is linked to the thoughts that we get, the words that we utter. Swami says the food is related to your thoughts and to the words. In fact, in some other places I have read Swami telling that the gross part of the food becomes,
yes,
the body.
Correct. Yes.
The subtle part becomes your thoughts.
Yes.
And very surprisingly, the subtlest part becomes the words.
Wow.
I have read this, that the subtlest, yes, parts become the words. Now, why that also, if you look at it, you see thoughts. We get a lot of thoughts which come and go. They are still,
yes,
passing. But,
yes,
when a thought becomes a word, it is actually taken a discretized form and concrete form.
Yes.
And that means we have dilated on that thought and then ruminated over it, and it's the result of that distilled concrete thought that comes in the form of a word. So that's the subtlest part of the food. So purity of food is so essential because this is the main fuel, as Swami says, which is going to run this instrument called the human body, for the purpose which is given in the 8.1,
yes,
paragraph. So we need to have purity, as Swami says in so many places. We all know, many of us know about this, patra shuddhi,
yes,
padartha shuddhi, paka shuddhi. You know, we have to take care of so many things. Where is, how is the food cooked? What is the motive behind it? You know,
yes,
when the food is just a commercial thing,
yes,
then its effect on the human body is also less.
Yes.
But when the food is as a prasadam,
yes,
offered to the Lord, and then we are partaking it, its effect on the human body is different. So these are things, in some sense what happens is that many of us, because living in today's world, in the 21st century, it is really very difficult to avoid so many varieties of things, and therefore be really Puritan in this particular thing of taking food
yes,
with purity. So we accumulate these kind of layers of, you know, I would say dust, which hides the fact that the food that we are taking is having effect on us. You see, how many of us really react to the food?
Yes.
Swami gives the example of that Rishikesh sannyasi,
yes, yes,
who had food and he was disturbed in his meditation by the vision of a girl.
Yes.
And then his guru, you know, tells him to find out where he had eaten food the previous night, and they find that they had eaten food, you know, on the Shraddha day in a family where this girl had passed away.
Businessman's
One businessman's
yes.
wife, I think.
One businessman's wife,
yes,
had passed away, and she was basically unhappy in the marriage. And so she just gave herself, took her life in the Ganga. She went into the Ganga, and so the businessman was unhappy. In fact, Swami goes on to say that he somehow managed to marry her with a lot of money. He was a businessman, he had a lot of money. But she was not happy in the marriage. Hmm. So when she took her own life, and then he said, okay, I have to do the Shraddha, and I have to, and he adds a detail there. He says that since the ashrams do not accept cooked food, he gave the, you know, the material. He gave the grains. He gave the uncooked food. But
just imagine, that's so important that even the uncooked food, normally we hear, you know, that the cooking process and the person who cooked, that thought gets into us, and then that's important. And here Swami is pointing
out that. Swami pointed out that.
Even said, the material.
Yes, he gave only the food material, the grains and all that. But in spite of that, this sadhaka could not have peace of mind, or didn't have good rest.
Yes.
Because the, even in his dreams, he was seeing the girl. And
I think also partly because these sadhakas are so transparent people.
Absolutely. That's one of the most important things. Because they are already so pure, that on a white slate, a small black dot is also visible. So they can feel the
effect
and the difference of different food.
Yes.
Whereas it doesn't happen to all of us all the time.
That means if we get bad dreams, are we pure? But you know, I was, as sir was saying and as you were mentioning, the first paragraph is something and the second paragraph is about food. The only thing that comes to my mind is the samokos. You know, Swami is actually talking, and he is giving the highest of philosophy, and of course in his own sweet way. He just walks down the aisle after the discourse. You got mango? Show me your mango. What size of mango? And I'm sure 99.9% of the people there would have forgotten the entire discourse. The entire focus is on the mango now. Now, whether I should eat the mango by cutting it, or I should press it and make it into a juice, and then I should drink that, that's it.
In fact, talking about summer course, I'm just reminded of this incident. A brother once shared that, you know, we know during summer course, Swami comes in the hostel and dines with the students.
Right.
Apparently, there was this little boy who was part of this group, perhaps, you know, the son of a guest. And he was very new to all this. And when Brahmarpanam started, this boy, because he was from Balvikas, so he got this doubt, we are doing Brahmarpanam, now why are we sitting with our food like this? You know, we should give it to Swami, because Swami is Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwara, he has been told in Balvikas. So he actually just picks up his plate and he goes to Swami, because Brahmarpanam is going
so
on.
So sweet.
Nice.
And so Swami looks at the little flow, and Swami picks one vada. From in that vada, there is one chili popping out. So Swami takes away that chili, and then Swami gives it back. And then Swami looks at the boy who was standing next to him and said, this is what I do when you do Brahmarpanam.
Amazing.
Wow.
You have said it, you know.
There it is.
When Meera drank the poison and it, you know, became Amrita, that's what Krishna did. So that's exactly what Swami is meaning by that. I remove the chili from the vada.
This is what I do when you do Brahmarpanam, Swami said.
But also this whole concept of Brahmarpanam, that I think these are two independent shlokas in the Bhagavad Gita.
Yes.
Brahmarpanam and Aham Vaishwanara.
Exactly.
And Swami has put these two together.
Yes.
And he has told all of us to chant it before food.
Yes.
And it's so incredible, because first we think Brahma is somebody somewhere else.
Yeah.
Then you say, no, I am that, I'm offering to myself.
Yes.
And like in every act of his, he doesn't...
In fact, sometime when I was a student, you know, I didn't really think so much about it during the Balvikas. But later on, I thought, why are we chanting these two mantras before food? You know? Then when I read the meaning, there's nothing about food only.
No, Pachamanyam Chaturvidhi.
That is very little, you know? later on, I started, you know, when you started thinking deeply about it, then so many meanings come out of this. I thought, you know, the first two lines can be for anything. I mean, that it has got nothing to do with food.
And as sir said, food is what you take in through all the senses.
Exactly. Right. And that is something very, very, I mean, it's perhaps another whole discussion by itself.
Yes.
But I think it's a pointer to how significant food is.
Yes, in the 1990 series, Swami had made a very nice point. He actually mentions this, that food is what you intake through all the senses. And then obviously the next question that comes is, okay, you should take only what is good and not take what is bad. So the next question is, what is good and what is bad? So Swami actually explains in the sequel there. He says, anything that takes you closer to God is good.
Yes, sir.
Anything that takes you away is bad.
Yes.
Simple and absolutely
perfect definition.
Yes.
That is a perfect definition. Yes.
In fact, I was just reminded, again, this is something that happened during the summer course. Apparently, we know how during summer course all the boys, many boys are actually accommodated in one room. So you have generally perhaps more than 20 boys sometimes in the same room. And so there was this group of students who had come from outside, of course. And so in the afternoon they had some disagreement and, you know, there was some bit of loud talk and all that in the hostel. And it was definitely not in the decorum. And and in Vrindavan, you know, the hostel is just next to the road. Everything comes out so easily. And that evening during darshan, Swami comes to this student and Swami says, what is this? Kokkalaga, you know, like dogs, you're fighting in the hostel.
Mm.
Swami says to this student, and this student, he was like really taken aback. He didn't know how to respond. And Swami was really furious. See, somehow he wanted to save his face. He said, Swami, I don't know how it happened, Swami. I don't know why I get angry, Swami. Swami said, no, you can't be like this. You shouldn't behave like this. He says, Swami, I don't know, Swami. Swami, maybe it's because of food I eat, Swami. I don't know. He wanted to put the blame on something, perhaps. He said, Swami, I don't know. Maybe it's because... Swami, I like all this karam and all that. Maybe it's because of the food, Swami. Then Swami says, it is okay. Even if you eat that, at least chant Brahmarpanam.
Oh,
I will take care. Now, it only shows, because sir was talking about
the
levels of purity that Swami mandates. You know, Paka Suddhi, Padartha Suddhi, and
Patra
Suddhi. Yes, this is what we should strive, but because of many circumstances, we may not be able to achieve the purity at all these levels. But even if you don't, if you're not able to do it, even though we should make our best efforts to ensure that we have purity at all those stages, but even if you're not able to have that, Swami saying, at least finally offer it to me and I will take care.
Yes. And that also has a condition on it, because how do we do the Brahmarpanam?
Yes, sir.
Is it just a lip service?
Correct.
Or is it coming from the heart?
Yes.
So that's another thing, because very often Swami used to joke, you know, that we say Brahmarpanam Keshavaya Nama and then we take it ourselves.
Yes.
So to remember or to take it with that feeling that I am doing it as an act of service to the Lord.
Yes.
That's something which is there in this connection, we are eating as an act of service.
Service, yes.
To eat food is an act of service.
Service.
That's something which is not easy to remind ourselves at all times, that we are not living to eat.
Yes.
As they say, we are eating to live.
Yes.
And that eating to live is to keep this instrument,
correct,
you know, in working condition.
Yes.
And finally, that instrument is basically something which is God.
Yes.
So we are actually doing service by taking this food. Because Swami says it is not for udara poshana, but it is for service.
For the yajna of...
Yes, he service. Calls it as a sacrifice.
Sacrifice.
Eating food.
Yes.
In fact, some gluttons may be very happy, you know, said, oh, at last, you know, there's a divine consent that we can eat as much as we feel like.
He has said quality, not quantity.
So that's another important thing. Yes, that it's not the quantity, but the quality.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
How you are offering it? What are you taking?
Yes.
In fact, even the, you know, the most, I will say, controversial thing, which many people who are not, I will say, devoted, are they eat non-vegetarian.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. And I'll say there are people who are worshipping gods also, and they also
yes.
eat non-vegetarian. There are all kinds of varieties of people. So this was one thing that Swami was very clear about
yes.
when he told this in public discourses or in writing.
Yes.
Because is it necessary for us to take somebody's life
yes.
for sustaining our own life? If you look at when we eat non-vegetarian, what is the consequence? And if really go by that story of the Rishikesh Sannyasi, which we
yes.
thought of, the way that you procure the food, that has effect on our mind, the thoughts of the cook has effect on our mind, the environment has the effect, the sanctity with which the food was, grown and purchased. All
yes.
of those things come in the paka shuddhi, padartha shuddhi,
yes.
patra shuddhi. Then what about something like non-vegetarian? Now, in a very gross scientific manner, you may just talk in terms of the biological implications.
Mm-hmm.
But just keep that aside for the time being,
yes.
be that as it may,
the environmental issues
yeah.
and all.
Yeah. Yes, so many other things.
Yes.
But what about the fact that every time I'm eating non-vegetarian, I have actually caused suffering to some living creature.
Right.
And would that living creature not have been pained by whoever it was?
Yes.
And if the result and the consequences of that have to be gone to others, and they have to be shared by others, who should they be?
Yes.
Should the person eating it not get
yes.
some portion of that, reaction of the intense suffering that any creature undergoes?
Yes.
When we put ourselves in that condition, we'll automatically realize.
Yes.
What if there was a creature, bigger than a human built in God's creation, for whom we were just food items?
Food items, yeah.
And what would we feel?
Yes.
Okay, just because you have the power, you can just
yeah.
chop me off and finish me and take me as a meal. Naturally, I'll have all my sufferings and curses will
yes.
get into it. My bad feelings will get into it. So
yes.
if that small Rishikesh Sannyasi episode has anything to tell,
yes.
I say that this non-vegetarian thing has something intense in it from
yes.
this point of view. Not
Absolutely.
From the biological and any other
yes.
point of view, but
yes.
the fact that when we cause suffering to any creature, it
yes.
cannot result in joy for us.
Yes.
So just for that reason,
yes.
I think in all religions there is this thing that, yes, do not cause harm and suffering to others.
Yes.
So even if the food is giving you a lot of nourishment and vitamins and
yes.
whatever it
yes.
may be,
yes.
but what about the fact that it's going to create some
yes.
consequences of adverse reactions?
Yes.
And that will be felt only when we have that kind of purity. This
yes.
Rishikesh Sanyasi
yeah.
could feel it.
Correct.
So it's possible that many of the people who eat, I myself used to eat non-vegetarian in my
okay.
childhood, okay? So I'm just telling that this is before
yes.
my 10th class onwards.
Okay.
So those consequences, yes, they will be there.
Yes.
But because of all the, accumulated dirt that we have, they are buried and we don't realize. But
yes.
it has effect on our mind and in so many ways. So we have
yeah.
to take care
yes.
of these things also.
In fact, it just makes me think that today modern science, almost everyone agrees that, non-vegetarian food is linked to many cancers. And, as you are explaining this, what occurs to me is, all these sufferings and, all those feelings where, an animal has gone, his emotions have gone berserk, because
yes.
he's been shocked, So that berserkness is what gets transferred into the cells. Because what is cancer
absolutely,
ultimately?
Absolutely.
The cells go berserk. Cancer is not a virus or a bacteria.
Yes.
It is basically certain cells suddenly go mad. So why? Because, these mad elements, these crazy elements have come into us. In fact, I was also reading.
Absolutely, that is one of the causes. I mean, because we don't know all the causes, but absolutely what you're telling is perfectly correct.
And some time ago also I was reading another discourse. You know, I used to have this thought that, you know, if man is the pinnacle of God's creation, you know, Swami says you need to really undergo so many births before you actually can get a human birth. And then I used to feel that, you know, if someone has actually taken a human birth, which means, you know, so much of refinement has happened, then how can he do something which is so bestial, you know? What has happened to all those years of refinement? And in one discourse, Swami says that, you know, when you take a lot of this non-veg, Swami says, you know, that life element actually gets into man's reproductive system also. Swami says, so even though you are born as a human being, you are not a human being. That's because somehow, you know, you have got into man's reproductive system also. I thought that is something really, something to think about. Because, you know, many times when you read many things today, you feel, no, it cannot, a man cannot do this. You know, a man, if he has a heart, he cannot do this.
And yet there are people are doing
this. So it is perhaps because that's why, you know, Swami's definition of who is a human is itself so profound. You know, you just can't, just because, I think Swami's told that many times in his discourses also, just because you have a human body, that does not mean you're a human. You're a human.
In fact, he keeps telling animality has to be removed from animality to humanity, from humanity to divinity.
Yeah.
So these are all part of the same sequence.
Yes.
Two thoughts on food. Because we are talking about food. One thought is possibly Swami has also encouraged Narayan Seva. Because, you know, serving pure food as prasad.
Yes.
And I think in the Shastras also it's mentioned that that is one of the highest forms of yajna or sacrifice or charity, because serving food. So I think many people have also started practicing this, that instead of giving money to somebody, you buy them a meal or give them some food.
Yes.
And that is a better way of doing service.
You know, as you're saying this, it never occurred to me. And now it's, you know, as you're saying, that, you know, when we do food, we are just thinking we are giving someone food. Actually, that's not what we are doing. According to what Swami is telling here, we are actually
Narayan Seva.
We are actually creating good thoughts. If you have served someone, if you have served like 1,000 people, and if you have cooked good food with pure thoughts, we have helped by creating perhaps maybe 1,000 good thoughts. And a good thoughts is what the world needs. It is not just the food, because food is, I mean, it starts with that. That's the most basic thing. I think to look at Narayan Seva as appeasing someone's hunger is the most basic thing. You know, I think when you're doing food, I think that's why Swami is so particular that, you know, you do Narayan Seva, you ensure that you do with Namasparana, you know, when the food is
like
cooked.
Narayan Seva is like a separate thing, because we can talk about Narayan Seva is something where you need to, you know, offer it as you're offering it
to God.
God.
So in fact, that aspect, we had a proof of that aspect. Because this is what came to my mind when you're talking about food. We are talking about our food. But Swami says, bliss is my food.
Yes.
He says, bliss is my food. And we actually saw it happening in Harshi. Because this was a very beautiful incident, and the way his face was glowing that evening, you will not believe. You have to actually stand there and see it. What happened was, so all these 2-3 days that Swami was there in Harshi, all the bhajans, events, everything was going on. And one day Swami said, let us go and see the plantations. So Mr. Jadav and their family, they had a lot of coconut plantations. Swami was taken to the coconut plantations, and he just took a round, and on his way back, he saw large tents. And he inquired what they were and all that. That evening, Swami called the entire family, the entire Jadav family, and boys, we were also there. Swami said, prime ministers and presidents have been wanting this opportunity to dine with me. But they have not got it. I am giving this opportunity to this entire family. Why? I don't need food. I don't want to touch food. My stomach is full. I'm full of bliss. Because you gave prasad to my devotees.
Oh.
So on his way back, he noticed those huge tents. And these people didn't even tell Swami that, Swami, we are giving. Then Swami found out from few others. They said, Swami, prasad is being served morning, breakfast, lunch, tiffin, dinner. Swami said, for everybody who comes. They said, yes, Swami. For everybody, prasad is prepared. And everybody, and you should have seen Swami's joy. He says, bliss is my food. Swami said, Swami went to the next level. In fact, Swami said, Pandavas prayed to Lord Krishna, Lord Krishna, please have food with us. Please have food with us. Swami, then Krishna said, not now. After the war, we will have Vijay Bhojanam. Victory, we will celebrate our victory with our with a grand feast. And Swami said, this is that Vijay Bhojanam. He told. Wow. He was so happy. Blissful. I can't describe. He was like, come sit. He says, nobody else has, I never, in fact, Swami was mentioning, I don't allow ladies to sit on the same table. Where means because always the gents have been there. But Swami said, now your parents, your family, two brothers' family, all of you will share the same table with me. And he was so excited. And you could see, bliss is my food. Yes. When Swami says, bliss is my food, again, why? Because they gave prasad to devotees. So that was a yajna they did.
Yes.
The art of serving food itself was a yajna. Yes. And that directly reached the Lord. And you could see the impact there and then. It was beautiful. Wow. Absolutely beautiful.
Amazing. Well, so many thoughts come to mind. In fact, there was one student who was part of this Kodaikanal trip. And he had started this habit in the hostel that every time he has food, he will carry his plate back to the wash basin, holding it not parallel to the ground, but perpendicular to the ground. It should be absolutely clean. You should have eaten everything. Because, you know, Swami was saying in many discourses, at least try to follow one principle. And he thought, okay, I'll follow this one principle. It's easy. Don't waste food. Anyway, I like to eat. I'll just ensure that I eat everything properly. So, and he was doing that very happily, but very meticulously. And every day he would go with the plate, holding it just with his two fingers. And he went to Kodaikanal. And in Kodaikanal, you know, you have this opportunity of really dining with Swami. And when Swami saw him do that in Kodaikanal, no, he was telling that happiness that Swami had. You know, when Swami saw that my plate is fully clean and I'm holding it like this, that joy, it told, you know, it was really worth it. The 5 years of sadhana found fulfillment.
Wow.
In that joy when you see in Swami's face that, you know, you're able to do this much justice, that much respect you give to the food. That was something amazing. In fact, you know, sir, you were talking about how many times we eat to live, but we have to learn, we have to know that we are living to eat. I mean, we don't live so that we can eat, but we eat so that we can live. But here, don't you think Swami has taken this to a new level? Because here Swami is telling, you've got to eat to serve, not to live. That is basic. And that is not even, you know, Swami says,
again, actually it's, you know, he has, as you look at it, you know, the 8.1 paragraph, he defines the goal.
Yes.
And here he's talking of the means.
Yes.
So he starts on that step one, that the food has to be pure and it has to be done in the as a service to your body.
Yes.
But you see how he ends. He again says that you have to take care of your body and strive to imbibe virtues.
Correct.
So, because, why should I take care of my body? Because through the body, I need to imbibe virtues.
Yes.
Through that virtues, I have to finally reduce body attachment, he says.
Yes. Yes.
And then lead yourself to the path of bliss, he says.
Yeah,
it comes, so he again comes back,
comes
full circle.
That. Yeah.
He started from the same thing and he comes back to the same thing, but he gave a glimpse of the fact that, see, at the human level, we cannot sustain ourselves without food in all senses.
Yes.
So we have to first take care of the purity of all these foods. But as once we learn how to take care of it, we go one step further and then use the body, which is growing out of this food of all the senses, use it for developing and fostering our virtues. So that is like the next step. He says, strive to imbibe virtues. And what should those virtues do? He defines it in another style and says that finally it has to reduce your body attachment. So that's very interesting that you serve to make your body grow.
Yes.
And then out of that good body, you develop virtues which help you to reduce your body attachment. And finally you have to again come back to the same goal. So it goes a full circle.
So every time we eat, we have to be very conscious of the fact that, I'm eating so that my body is nourished, so that one day I can be out of this body consciousness.
Yes, so it's like a full circle. That's, then only it becomes serving the Lord through the eating. Eating itself becomes a service and a yajna and a sacrifice.
In fact, one more thought which comes here is in many religious beliefs, and in many religions, I think not only in Hinduism, but even in other religions, upavasa, fasting, is an important ingredient.
Yes.
And invariably people do it as a ritual to go closer to God. Okay, to go, it's a form of worship. And Swami would often say, it's not only, I mean, you're not having food, but all the time thinking about the food is not going to serve the purpose. At the same time, he redefines upavasa. He says upa. Upa is nearness. Nearness. And vasa is staying near. Staying near. So he says, it's not only abstinence from not taking food, but being near to God. And then, of course, he goes one step further and he says, even rats and ants are in your house. They are very near to you. But are they dear to you? He says, are they? Nearness is not enough. And the typical example which Swami gives.
Yeah, that was specifically because when Swami was physically there, there was a chance of us falling into the trap that just if I come physically near to,
near to him,
that's enough. No, so upavasa did not mean just being physically near, but I must get into his heart, he must get into my heart, no?
Exactly.
And that's the dearness.
That dearness, in fact, he gives that example. He says, if your neighbor, his son has had a fall or something, the entire philosophy of the world comes to your mind. After all, life is temporary. It's a passing cloud. Don't worry. You'll be all right. But if a mosquito bites somebody in America, your own relative, even though he's far away, you're so worried. Oh my God, a mosquito bit. We don't know whether it was.
Yes, that is dearness.
That is dearness. So, Swami says, nearness and dearness. Yes. So, upavasa or not having food, has a deeper implication. In fact, just on the same note, there was one of our school, one of our classmates. So he said, Swami is not speaking to me. So how do I make Swami speak to me? And he said, I will not have dinner. And upavasa I will do. So there was this music room in the hostel, you remember? Said, now it became the dietary. So he was sitting there and singing Hanuman Chalisa. It was also the Hanuman Chalisa room. So he was sitting and singing Hanuman Chalisa. He said, I'm just silently going to skip food until Swami speaks to me. All that. Swami sent message from Mandir. One boy is sitting there. You tell him to go and have food.
In a way he achieved his purpose.
In a way he achieved it.
But actually, when we were talking about this Brahmarpanam ritual, just reminded of this incident, how, you know, how this Brahmarpanam done with a sense of sincere religiosity, sincere offering, as an offering to God, it can have really amazing results. There was this incident of this boy who used to be very meticulous about Brahmarpanam, and he would be always the first person to go for the dining sessions. So this happened sometime in the 90s. So he would be there sitting 1.1 with the food, and he would close his eyes and then would begin his session of Brahmarpanam. The boy next to him would have taken his food would have come, he would have started his food, and he would have finished his food, but still his Brahmarpanam would go on. So people would think, what is this? Are you doing Brahmarpanam or night prayer and Suprabhatam, everything together?
Really?
Yeah. So there was this boy who was very, very particular about, perhaps because of his upbringing, you know, the food process was, it was a very elaborate process for him before eating food, the prayer process. But this is one thing he should never compromise on. And so this is how it was, you know, he didn't really bother what other boys were saying, you know, he never bothered about being a laughing stock, nothing. This is something uncompromising. And so this went on like for months together. And after years, there was this occasion where there was this program in the Sai Kulwant Hall. There was this martial art expert, you know, Kalaripayattu. So this person had come from Kerala, and you know, with sword he was doing this different movements and gestures, you know, different antics with the sword. Everything was like really fantastic. I mean, everyone was in awe, and Swami was sitting there, and there was this stage cleared for him. All the boys were sitting in the side, and as this person was continuing with his antics, suddenly he asked one boy to come in front, and he made him sit in the center. And he gave him a banana. He told, put it in your mouth. Okay. Okay. And then he had, he started his, you know, his movements. And Swami got very scared actually because he was holding a sword. You know, physically Swami was actually pointing his finger and warning him, you be careful, you know, it is my student there. What are you doing? You know, what is the adventure that you're trying to do? And he was like prostrating to Swami, you know, taking his blessings to start his new adventure. And Swami was, instead of blessing, Swami was like, be careful. Do you know what you're doing? It was like that. You could see that Swami's concern for, you know, what is going to happen with this boy. And this boy is sitting there with his mouth open and, you know, this banana put in his mouth. And this person started doing all his movements, and shak, he hit, and the banana cut right in front of his mouth into two. And this boy was still as a rock. Nothing happened to him. He was perfect.
Wow.
And imagine, he was sitting there right in front of Bhagwan, with his mouth open, with his food in the mouth, and he is the one who has been doing this elaborate food prayer for years together.
Oh, this is the same boy.
Same boy. Same boy. It was like a culmination of, you know, his years of penance that he had. Imagine, he never ever thought that, you know, he will actually be sitting in front of Swami and doing this prayer session, his long prayer session, with food in the mouth right in front of Bhagwan.
Anybody else would have had it off. <That's a banana. laughs>
Amazing.
No, I was just thinking, you know, when you take up something like that with that much of sincerity, you don't know where it will take you. I mean, it took him right to the physical presence of Bhagwan, and see the connecting of dots, you know, randomly this person picks up some boy, and it happens to be that boy.
Yeah, talking about the, you know, the ritual of the prayer and the way that he took it so sincerely, I'm also reminded of the fact that, you know, Swami gives some do's and don'ts regarding how one should eat food.
Yes, sir.
And these are some things which in today's world it's very difficult to avoid. But at least we could recollect some of these things or list out some of those things so that step by step, maybe whenever possible, we can reduce these inputs. For example, Swami is very often told that when you are eating, there should not be, you know, you should not have too many distracting and exciting thoughts.
Yes.
Like watching television or, the, you know, talking and thinking of things which are, you know, creating excitement.
Yes.
Because that food process, possibly, you know, modern science is not aware how thoughts and food, how these two are interlinked.
Correct.
And how our thoughts affect the food, and how the food affects our thoughts in turn later on.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So the process, the time when we eat food, especially in today's so-called fast world, you know, where it is full of fast foods.
Yes.
And, you know, we always have to have, I will not say always, but typically in the corporate world, one has to, you know, have food and meetings over lunch and over breakfast, lunch, tea, dinners, and most of the time talking and eating are together.
Yes.
But if you look at it, Swami has given us a method that while eating, one should, as far as possible, avoid unnecessary talk, reduce talk, reduce excitement, do not watch movies while eating. These are only to remind us that there are deeper connections between food and our mind.
Yes.
And these are things which we are possibly not aware of.
Yes.
In fact, one of the students, when I was talking to him, and one of my research scholars, and he gave a very nice analogy, and he said, yes sir, Swami has given us an instrument and he has given us a user manual for the instrument. So this instrument called the human body that God has gifted us with, this instrument has also come with a user manual.
Yes.
So if we are really rational and scientific, of course many of us don't look at the user manual of our own instruments and we abuse the instrument. But if you are aware of the instructions in the user manual and if we take care of them, to that extent the longevity of the instrument and its warranty will remain according to the conditions laid down in the user manual.
Correct.
So to that extent, if we can follow some of these instructions in daily life whenever possible, it will help in taking care of the body.
Yes.
And these are things which we all, you know, neglect at various times.
Correct.
But if we can remind ourselves, then it will also help a long way in, you know, ensuring the purity of food also means the purity of the way that the food gets in.
Gets in,
to your body.
Yeah, absolutely. I think also Swami, I remember on occasions he had mentioned that when you, for example, sit down and eat, Swami said your tendency to overeat is actually much less than, you know, sitting on a chair and eating, actually.
Okay.
And which which we can always try, you know. I can tell this from my own example. If you if you sit down and eat, it is always you get up much lighter than, you know, you're sitting on a chair and eating. It is
I don't think he gave it as any rule or
Swami has,
possibly it must be one of those hidden instructions in the user manual. If you really follow it, there is a little more benefit. But
I
because of the circumstances, possibly some of these things are slowly, you know, discarded.
Yes.
But it must be true.
Just like, you know, even eating with hands. Now you have, you know, so many other disciplines of knowledge now where they're coming in and saying how it is so significant that the food that you consume, when you consume through your hands, it is not as if you're going back to the Stone Age, but actually you are eating the food in a manner that you're able to imbibe everything of the food, all the rasas of the food, you're able to get in, you're getting most of the food only when that connection is made through the fingers and through the body. I mean, yes, we need to do a lot more research in these areas, perhaps it will happen, and not that everything that science can do, but different kinds of sciences need to really develop to give us understanding. But for us, I think it's very simple. If Swami has said it, you better do it. And wait for science to substantiate it later.
In fact, you know, 99, Bishu, yourself and both of us were on the same trip to Kodaikanal.
Oh, oh.
Two things come to my mind. One is, invariably during the food sessions in Kodai, as we start Brahmarpanam and as we conclude Brahmarpanam, Swami has already completed his food.
Yes. Yeah, most of
so he is most of the time he's finished, and then he goes around and says, hey, why you have not taken this, you have not taken that.
Yes.
So he excuses himself from all the items he eats. He used to eat very, very little. But on one occasion, that is before he went to Kodai, I remember that very, very well, in Madurai. So that was the first time Swami was going to Madurai, and they had arranged an elaborate tiffin. So, you know, everything was there, right from samosa, this, that, everything, and Swami's table was laid, and Swami said, I never have tiffin. And you have arranged so many things. And Swami, please, Swami, please. And that is when Swami actually named it Ananda Nilayam also.
Correct.
That is a story in itself. But all these items are there. That day was a very different Brahmarpanam. Swami said, everybody was given a small plate for tiffin. And Swami said, chappandi, Brahmarpanam, chappandi, chappandi. So, as they started Brahmarpanam, and some of them were closing eyes, some of them, Swami said, close eyes and chant Brahmarpanam. So, I was sitting just under, literally under Swami's table, because the place was a little bit small. Yes. And then with his feet, he just kind of tugged, he just hit me on the, then I opened my eyes, and then he was taking out one item from his plate, and passing it out.
Oh wow, oh, such a sweet moment.
He was just, you know, samosa is going down, and on the other side, somebody was there, Swami was just passing one item from his plate. And he was like, then we also didn't keep quiet. I mean, so we were passing it on to the others. So as Swami was passing to us, we were passing it on to others. So that whole chain reaction was going on during Brahmarpanam. The moment Brahmarpanam got over, Swami said, see, I finished everything. Means he has just given it to us. I mean, even if we eat it, it amounts to Swami eating. So Swami said, see, I've given it off to all of you.
What a beautiful memory. Yeah?
So that was very, very sweet. You can't forget that. Yes. And Swami is just taking from his plate and just giving it. And he said, all of you have it.
That is the greatest blessing of having the divine master come in a human form, isn't it? I mean, such profound lessons, so simply given, and something you can deliberate on for any number of times, and every time it will give you a new lesson.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. So dear listeners, time is running out, so we really need to conclude this session. But if you think about the takeaways, Saleh sir so beautifully connected what we discussed in 8.1 to what is being discussed in 8.2, because that whole cycle of how food is ultimately this whole process of going back to the central goal, the main goal of life, and that's what again Swami reiterates in the end also, the last line of 8.2, where Swami says, in this manner, by taking care of the vesture that is the human body and at the same time striving to imbibe the virtues, one can slowly reduce attachment to the body and easily tread on the path to experience Atmanandam, the bliss of the self. So I think that is one of the very important takeaways from this 8.2, where every time we take food, we know that it is an yagnam, and we know that we are here to nourish this body so that this body will know that it is here to serve. And the greatest service that we can do to ourselves is to know that we are not the body. That is the most beautiful message that's coming out so strongly. And dear listeners, if you spend time on it, if you meditate on it, if you try to live this in your life, I'm sure you will have your own insights, your own experiences, your own conclusions, inferences and experiments, which will give you a deeper understanding of what Bhagwan has said. And so please, let's try this out. Let's do this even before modern science or anyone else asks us to do. Let's do it because we have got it straight from the source. And as we do this, let's share these beautiful insights. Dear listeners, please feel free to write to us. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. We'll be very happy to share your experiments with Prema Vahini, with all the listeners of Radio Sai, so that we too, all of us together, can relish this stream of beautiful, nectarous message from Sai, so that one day all of us can experience the bliss that is Sai. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.